21-2222 A.O. Smith Corporation v. Bradford White Corporation. Okay, Mr. Barney.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. I'd like to begin with the District Court's construction of natural convection. Natural convection is a familiar term with a well-defined meaning that can be found in dictionaries, encyclopedias, and textbooks. Natural convection refers to fluid motion caused by temperature gradients in the fluid. That is a scientific fact. It's not disputed in this case. The District Court erred in not applying this ordinary meaning of natural convection, but instead equating natural convection with Category 1 venting, which is a broader concept. Category 1 venting is mentioned only a single time in the specification.
I'm sorry, I'm not sure if this is an imprecision or if it matters. The Court didn't equate it with its Category 1. It said it has to be consistent with Category 1.
It said that in order to satisfy the natural convection limitation, you had to be Category 1 compliant.
So he actually built in a moisture requirement, a condensation requirement? I don't remember that, which is part of the definition. I understand that there's a venting pressure and a condensation creating four categories with the four obvious low-high, you know, less than zero, above zero. And Category 1 has a particular combination which requires not only the non-negative or the non-positive pressure in the vent, but also low condensation. Is there anything about low condensation?
Not in the District Court's construction per se, although it does say Category 1. And in order to be Category 1 compliant, you would have to meet that condensation requirement. But I do take your point, Your Honor. The focus of the Court's construction and what happened at trial was really on this issue of static pressure versus dynamic pressure. And that's where the Category 1 venting standard comes in. The Category 1 standard is broader and more lenient than natural convection. And the reason for that is that there is both static pressure and dynamic pressure, which undisputedly relates to flow or velocity. By essentially construing natural convection as being keyed to Category 1 venting, the District Court broadened the scope of the claim beyond what the Patent Office granted. Category 1 compliance does not necessarily mean you're exiting the plenum substantially entirely under the influence of natural convection, which is what the claim requires. And again, that's because there's both a static pressure, which is what Category 1 venting is looking at, but there's also dynamic pressure, which relates to the flow or the velocity of the combustion products as they're moving through the system. And it's undisputed that Category 1 venting does not look at that. And if you look at the 897 patent, it's clear that it is specifically concerned with uncoupling the influence of the power burner from both the pressure and the velocity of the combustion products. And we cited multiple instances of that in the specification. And in contrast, the Category 1 standard is only concerned with static pressure in addition to condensation, which relates to temperature. But for purposes of this patent, what was relevant is the Category 1 standard only looks at static pressure. It does not look at all at flow or velocity. And so basically, there's a mismatch. There's a mismatch between what the patent is concerned with, which was reducing both static pressure and velocity in the plenum before it exits, and what the Category 1 standard is concerned with, which is really just reducing static pressure in addition to the temperature requirement, which relates to condensation.
As I read the testimony on which the District Court relied, put aside Stafford, because there's a question as to whether Stafford really said what the District Court thought it said. But putting aside Stafford, the other testimony on which the District Court relied said, we don't have to worry about velocity here because if we find that it's near or below atmospheric pressure, that tells us that the burner blower no longer has an influence. I'm not sure that I understand that. I mean, the fact that the atmospheric pressure of something doesn't tell you anything about whether there's velocity in the air, no?
I think I am agreeing with what you're saying, but if I could try to answer your question, and if I don't answer correctly, let me know. there are a variety of findings that the court made along those lines that you just mentioned. We believe all of those findings stem from the construction. In other words, once the court construed the claim as basically saying natural convection is relating to Category 1 venting and the patent is all about Category 1 venting, once you make that leap as a matter of claim construction, well, then, of course, there's a bunch of tautological findings that
you need
make.
All you need to measure, then, is atmospheric pressure.
That's right, Your Honor, the static pressure. And so we think the original sin, if you will, was that construction. All of those findings of fact and all of the evidence at trial really hinged on that claim construction and whether you're just looking at static pressure, which is what their expert did, or whether you're looking at both static pressure and the dynamic pressure, which relates to the flow or the velocity of the products of combustion, which is what our expert did. The district court found the testimony of our expert not credible, but mainly because he was talking about velocity. And the district court said, that's not relating to my claim construction because my claim construction is only about Category 1 venting, which only looks at static pressure. So again, it goes to this mismatch, and that is the reason why the court's construction was not harmless error. If I may, I'd like to now turn to the other claim limitation, unless Your Honors have questions about natural convection. So I'd like to now turn to the district court's construction of the dropping limitation. Now, this limitation requires dropping the pressure of the products of combustion to near atmospheric pressure within the plenum. The district court construed near atmospheric pressure to mean a pressure sufficient to allow the products of combustion to rise out of the plenum substantially entirely under the influence of natural convection. So that's a functional requirement. That was AOS's requested construction, and the parties don't dispute that construction on appeal. So when you put that all together, what the dropping limitation requires is a drop in pressure in the plenum that results in a pressure that is sufficient to allow for natural convection. Now, importantly, it's undisputed that a pressure sufficient to allow for natural convection can be negative. In fact, AOS's expert testified that it must be negative to allow for natural convection to take over. At Appendix 866, lines 4 through 13, during direct of their expert, they asked him, what's the difference between the dropping limitation and the permitting limitation? And their expert specifically said that dropping is dropping the pressure to that negative pressure that will allow natural convection. And so there's no dispute here that near atmospheric pressure can and, in fact, must be negative in order to establish that conditions for natural convection. So that brings us to the next point, which is if near atmospheric pressure can be negative, there is no reason to believe or assume that the pressure of the exhaust gases must be positive before coming into the plenum. Because as a scientific fact, you can drop from a negative pressure to a lower negative pressure. That's a pressure drop. And if that lower negative pressure is sufficient to allow for natural convection, then you've met the dropping limitation under the district court's undisputed construction of near atmospheric pressure. There's no additional requirement in the claim language that the pressure has to be positive before entering the plenum. Now, there's also nothing in the specification
Isn't the natural meaning of this language, dropping the pressure of the products of combustion, too near atmospheric pressure within the plenum, such that what you're saying is you're dropping it into a range it wasn't previously in, which is to say it was positive before. Just as a natural way of using that language.
Your Honor, I don't disagree that if we were starting on a blank slate that somebody could make that argument and there could be litigation on that particular point. But that is not how the court construed near atmospheric pressure. And at the request of AOS. And there's a reason that AOS asked for that functional definition of near atmospheric pressure. There's only one mention of pressure in this claim. There's only one dropping limitation in this claim, and that is the dropping step. And they knew that in order for this claim to make sense, you have to drop it to the pressure that enables it to lift out through natural convection. And they knew that that's a negative pressure. And so they asked for a functional definition of near atmospheric pressure. And they got it. And the court said near atmospheric pressure means whatever pressure is needed to get that natural convection. And there's no dispute that that's a negative pressure. And once you have that construction.
Is there a dispute about whether there can be a negative pressure that's so teeny tiny negative that it doesn't perform that function?
I think the testimony of their expert was that it has to be a sufficiently negative pressure. And so it has to drop to their expert testified, again, appendix 866, lines 4 through 13, that it has to drop to that negative pressure that will allow for natural convection. So our reading of this is that if you have a pressure drop, and the pressure drop is in the plenum, and that the result of that pressure drop is a pressure that's sufficient to allow for natural convection, then you satisfy the limitation, regardless of whether you started above or below atmospheric pressure.
And this is this claim element playing a role here only on this anticipation by TAM issue?
It's mainly keyed to that as well. Although I will say,
do I remember right that in TAM the pre-plenum pressure is actually positive?
No, in TAM the problem was that
put aside your backup argument about different kinds of pressure.
The problem was in TAM there was no way to pinpoint exactly where the pressure first reaches atmospheric, and so it's possible that that happens in the flue tubes. Or it's possible that it happens in the plenum. It wasn't clear where it happened, but what was undisputed was that there's a pressure drop in the plenum, and that was the testimony and the evidence that was put in at trial. After trial, there was a dispute about, well, is there a positive pressure limitation? And the court essentially retroactively ruled that there is a positive pressure limitation, and therefore we had failed to prove through inherency that TAM anticipates, because we never proved that the pressure is necessarily positive in the flue tubes before it enters the plenum. Our expert said it's possible that it could be negative. So that's how that issue came about. Now, one thing I'd like to point out, because I think it's important here, is not only does the claim language not specifically require a positive pressure, but there's nothing in the specification that requires it either. And in fact, a preferred embodiment of the invention teaches to reduce the pressure and velocity of the combustion products in the flue tubes such that they creep and spill into the plenum with little or no energy. The district court held that creep and spill embodiment is excluded from Claim 1. And the rationale for that was that Claim 1 requires a plenum. But, of course, that's an incorrect rationale, because it's undisputed that the creep and spill embodiment also includes a plenum. It's illustrated in Figure 3, labeled as 70. So the court erred in construing the dropping limitation as excluding this preferred embodiment, because there's no persuasive evidence that that embodiment was intended to be excluded from the claim. And what I would like to point out, Your Honor, is there's really only two embodiments in this patent. There's the creep and spill embodiment, where you reduce the pressure and velocity all the way down to essentially near atmospheric, and then it just spills into the plenum. The only other embodiment is the one that includes a deflector. You put the deflector there so that if the products of combustion enter the plenum with too much velocity or pressure, it deflects the flow down before it rises up into the flue tubes. Importantly, Claim 1 does not require or does not include a deflector limitation, which strongly suggests that both embodiments, both the creep and spill embodiment and the deflector embodiment, were intended to be covered under the scope of Claim 1. And going to your point about TAM, under the correct construction of the dropping limitation, which includes the creep and spill embodiment and does not include a positive pressure requirement, TAM clearly anticipates the claim. There was no dispute that all the other limitations are satisfied. The only dispute was this dropping limitation. There's also no dispute that there's a pressure drop in TAM. And there's no dispute that the resulting pressure at the end of that pressure drop is sufficient to allow for natural convection, as well as Category 1 venting. And so under the correct construction, we think the district court's findings are sufficient for this court to reverse and find that TAM anticipates the claim. Their only rebuttal to that is that they say the district court's finding that a pressure drop in TAM in the plenum did not specifically say it's a static pressure drop. We think that's clearly inferred from the court's earlier ruling at the very beginning of its opinion that all of the pressures relevant to this case and to its opinion are static pressures. Moreover, they don't dispute that TAM is both Category 1 compliant and it satisfies the natural convection limitation, both of which would require negative static pressure at the outlet of the plenum. I see that I'm close to my time. I would like to reserve a bit for rebuttal unless Your Honors have any additional questions.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Bourne. We'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Sarxis?
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Ed Sarskis of Michael Best and Friedrich, and I appear on behalf of the plaintiffs appellees, A. O. Smith Corporation and AOS Holdings Company. There are a couple of issues that have been raised by Bradford White on appeal. I think it's important, though, to just appreciate that the 897 patent consists of a single method claim that was conceived during development of a new water heater design that was key and novel because it combined a power burner to increase the efficiency of the water heater and yet remain compatible with an existing Category 1 vent system. The whole
okay, so let me tell you what the problem that I see about the permitting limitation is. As I read the testimony of your witnesses, they're basically saying because the dropping limitation is satisfied, that is, you're getting to near atmospheric pressure, that you can rule out any impact of the blower velocity in connection with the permitting limitation. So how can it be that the claim contemplates that showing that your near atmospheric pressure shows that you're satisfying the permitting limitation? That's confusing to me.
So the two steps of dropping the pressure of the products of combustion on the before the products of combustion leave the flues and enter the plenum, it is part of the sequence of events, and this is what the...
I don't think you're addressing my question. Your witnesses testified that because the pressure was near atmospheric pressure, there was no influence from the blower anymore. And the only thing we need to look at is atmospheric pressure. And I just don't understand how that theory is consistent with the claim itself, which talks about reaching near atmospheric pressure in one limitation and then says, in addition, you've got to show that it's working substantially entirely under the influence of natural convection. How can it be that you can rule out blower influence simply by saying that you've reached near atmospheric pressure?
Well, what we know is that the positive pressure is created by the influence of the power burner at the beginning of the cycle of the operation of the water heater. The only thing that creates positive pressure is the power burner. And so the influence of the power burner in the context of claim one is the creation source. The dissipation of that positive pressure is what's being referred to when the discussion turns to the decreasing or the drop in the pressure of the products of combustion that can begin in the flues based on the specifications teaching and then enters into the plenum at a positive pressure, because what we know from the claim language is that the significant drop in pressure happens within the plenum.
I don't think you're addressing my question, which is, how can it be that the claim contemplates that dropping the pressure to near atmospheric pressure rules out any velocity effect from the burner? These are two separate limitations in here, and as I read the testimony from your experts, they're saying because we satisfy one limitation, we also satisfy the other one.
They are not... The analysis of the two, I want to try to answer the court's question as directly as I can. I think that the testimony of Dr. Tanbor is one place, but I think the district court's analysis also addresses the reasons why the district court concluded that both limitations independently.
The district court said velocity isn't relevant. I'm not sure how that statement is consistent with the claim limitation of substantially entirely, which seems to say that you have to show that velocity is not a factor, or not a significant factor.
And the way that the static pressure measurement determines or evidences that static pressure has the static pressure created by the power burner has been dissipated within the plenum is by that static pressure measurement. In other words, the static pressure dropping to zero.
But that seems to agree with what I said, that they're saying that we don't need to worry about the permitting limitation because we've satisfied the dropping limitation.
There are several reasons why that's incorrect. I mean, the claim language itself requires that the products of combustion be under a positive pressure when the products of combustion enter into the plenum. And what I'm referring to now is at column 4, and specifically beginning at line 12. In this regard, the plenum and baffle may be said to uncouple the flow of the products of combustion from the power burner. And so the phrase that's being used here is uncoupling the flow of the products of combustion from the power burner. It goes on to say, in other words, the products of combustion enter the plenum under the influence of the power burner. In other words, under the influence of the power burner, which is a positive static pressure, but they exhaust from the plenum without the influence of the power burner.
Well, exactly. It's good. You've got to show, as part of the burden to show infringement, you've got to show that the influence of the power burner has dissipated. But the only evidence that you presented that had occurred was that it was near or at atmospheric pressure. I don't understand how that can be a sufficient showing of infringement when all that shows is that the previous claim limitation has been met.
The next part of the limitation is met by the fact that the products of combustion then ultimately rise up under natural convection from the plenum into the vent system. That's a separate limitation. It's some separate temporally.
Is it not true that your experts testified that we don't need to worry about velocity because we're near or at atmospheric pressure?
That is true, Your Honor. That static pressure.
That's the problem.
I think I'm just going to say the same thing, but under that theory, there's zero role for this permitting limitation because it would always be satisfied if the previous limitation would be satisfied. Is that right?
No, it wouldn't be satisfied. And the way that we know it wouldn't be satisfied is because the products of combustion wouldn't be drawn out of the plenum under natural convection. And the evidence that would show that is the spillage that would result, the unsafe condition of the operation of the water heater. And the court actually took a fair bit of time in the findings of fact to walk through all the evidence that shows that the spillage is the condition that arises when the natural convection is no longer the force that's operating on the products of combustion to draw them up into the vent system. And in particular,
I don't know that spillage can't be contained even if there is some significant but minor influence from the blower.
So the evidence in the record by a person of ordinary skill in the art and the people who testified that qualified to testify as POSAs in the case were all people who have designed gas water heaters. Including from Bradford White, their lead engineer on the accused products testified on this point about the operation of natural convection, drawing the products of combustion out of the water heater and the effects of spillage and the safety condition that it creates when natural convection is not the force drawing those products of combustion out. What the resulting effect is this unsafe condition where you have noxious fumes being
I'm being dense here, but can you just explain one more time how, if you've met the dropping the pressure of the products of combustion to near atmospheric pressure within the plenum, so you're now at atmospheric pressure in the plenum, how could it ever not be the case that the next limitation would be met?
How could it ever be the case that the products of combustion don't flow out of the...
It's by natural convection, which is to say, how is it possible that this, under that theory, in a case of near atmospheric pressure within the plenum, that this limitation, the permitting limitation, is something other than meaningless? Because it will always be the case.
It won't always be the case because the water heater won't work properly. You'll have a product that...
What if the vent was closed?
What if the vent was closed? Well, then, yeah, so...
Right, but this is a permitting limitation, right? Permitting it to happen, right?
Correct. Permitting the products of combustion to rise out of the plenum into the natural vent construction has to be substantially entirely under the influence of natural convection. That wouldn't be able to happen, and the water heaters still operate under a safe set of circumstances. So
you could have atmospheric pressure and still not meet this limitation. So demanding that this limitation be met demands something more.
It does.
And what would that be?
It would demand that the water heater actually be able to operate and operate safely. Just to cover this point, point out some of the ways that the district court distinguished between the category.
I'm still unclear. I mean, the problem is that there are two alternative ways of causing the gases to exit. One is by natural convection. The other one is by blower, right?
Yes.
And what it seems as though this limitation is saying, we've got to have a situation where the blower is playing a non-existent or insignificant role in the exit. And I'm just not understanding where the evidence is from you that that limitation was satisfied, where the proof is that the blower played a minimal role in this. I just don't see how proving that there was at or below atmospheric pressure shows that.
So the distinction between the different categories of vent system go to Judge Rainier's question about closing the vent. So for example, if the influence of the power burner is present throughout the system, you can't have an open vented system. A category one vent system wouldn't work. The water heater wouldn't operate safely and effectively under that circumstance. And that's how we know whether or not the permitting limitation has done its job, if you will.
Where's the testimony that a minor effect from the blower causes the water heater to be unsafe?
Well, there's actually, if we look to the findings, the court actually spent quite a bit of time. I mean, this goes to the spillage point that I was trying to get at.
Try to answer my question. Where's the testimony that a minor impact from the blower, which would not satisfy the substantial entirely limitation, makes the water heater unsafe?
So that testimony came in through several witnesses, Mr. Reynolds.
Okay, but where? Show me where.
Yeah, I'm doing my best, Judge, to find that in the transcript. But so I think if we look at Appendix 27, the court lays out several findings of fact about the water heater in the regulatory market. And then on Appendix 28, beginning at paragraph 53, the National Fuel Gas Code and ANSI standards talk about the requirements that are necessary to satisfy.
It doesn't address what I'm asking you about. Where do we find the testimony that a minor effect from the blower causes the water heater to be unsafe?
So if we look at Appendix 42, beginning at paragraph 146 and continuing through 148, I'll just focus on 148, from the perspective of a POSA, if the products of combustion were still under the influence of the power burner as they leave the plenum of the accused products, there would be positive pressure in the vent system and therefore for potential for spillage in and around the draft hood and leakage in the vents. That came through the testimony of Eddie Smith, who was one of the inventors, Mr. Reynolds, and then...
But it's still under the influence of the power burner. Where's the testimony that says a minor influence would cause it to be unsafe? There's no such testimony, is there?
I don't know that I can point the court to it specifically, but I'm not prepared to concede that there isn't any such testimony, Your Honor. I think the testimony from the persons of ordinary skill in the art, including people who have been testing water heaters for safe compliance for literally decades, that testimony, including the testimony in paragraphs 146, 147, and 148, is the evidence that the court is looking for to show that positive static pressure measurements are the indication that the power blower or the power burner is still influencing the products of combustion, and that once the static pressure measurements drop to near zero, then natural convection can take over and draw those products of combustion up into the vent, and that for the water heater to work properly, the permitting limitation is doing its job.
I think most of my colleagues have further questions. I think we're out of time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Warner, you have 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. I just have two very quick points, subject to any additional questions you have. The first point is my colleague began his argument by saying that the key and novel part of their invention, or the key and novel aspect of the invention, was being able to use a power blower with a Category 1 compliant system. TAM already taught that. That was undisputed. It has a power blower, has a plenum, and it's Category 1 compliant. So that's my first point. Second point, going to your line of questioning, Your Honor, I think one place to look, I think that summarizes the error here very succinctly, is appendix page 73, footnote 13, where the district court acknowledged the testimony and the evidence that it's possible to attain Category 1 compliance even if there's still influence from the burner, that's the power burner, which is the blower and the burner, downstream of the plenum. And the court held that even if that's correct, even if there's influence downstream of the plenum from the power burner, it's no more consequential to the infringement analysis than is Dr. Abraham's cold flow testing. That encapsulates the error, because the district court is flat out saying, I don't care about the influence of the power burner, even if it's downstream of the plenum, because all I care about is static pressure, because that's all the Category 1 vent standard requires. And subject to any questions Your Honors have, that's all I had.
Okay. Thank you. Thank both counsel. The case is submitted.